This is the August 5 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Bill Biederman. He's at agmarket.net out of Spring City, Tennessee. Tom Guinan joins us from Farmers Grain in Thief River Falls, Minnesota. And Greg Johnson is here from the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Garrett Toy joins us as well from agtradertalk.com. He's out of Stockton, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Let's get a list of items we might want to take up, maybe just one or two from each of you. I think Greg Johnson will start with you for the day.
Okay, I've got a couple of things I'm curious about is how will the farmer respond to this inverse, this $1 inverse between old crop corn and new crop corn and basically dollar old crop beans and new crop beans? Will they sell corn? Will they store corn? How will they handle that inverse? And then the other thing I'm curious about is this double crop safrinha corn down in South America. Estimates are dropping daily, it seems like, and will that exactly translate one for one into increased exports out of the U.S., or will people do without? I guess those are the two questions I'm curious about.
Garrett Toy from AgTraderTalk.com out of Stockton.
I obviously focus on production ahead of next week, or yield estimates ahead of next week's crop production report, but I think there's an underlying concern about the Chinese demand or demand in general, because even though flat price really hasn't moved that much, we've seen a pretty good correction of the inverses in the old new spreads, the balance sheet spreads in both corn and soybeans this week. And I'd be curious on what people's thoughts are as far as, what are we looking at? Why is China kind of lagging in here on bean demand? And what do people think on corn demand for next year?
Bill Biederman from agmarket.net.
Well, I'd like to go through the math on how we come up with these yield estimates. We put together a spreadsheet that has some pretty interesting things that are revealed. And then I would like to talk about those exports, like Greg mentioned. So there's quite a huge problem that we could be running into down the road.
And Tom Guinan from Farmers Grain out of Thief River Falls, Minnesota.
Well, I think the main thing I want to hear from you folks is your expectations for corn and soybean production in your respective parts of the country. And then, what we're focused on is spring wheat right now. We're in the midst of harvest, and we're concerned about what these wheat millers are going to do with high-protein wheat.
Well, let's begin with the two grain originators, Tom and Greg. So, Greg, I think you'll find this of interest. Let's talk a little bit about the inverse. Greg, what are your bids? Cash, old crop, spot bid, and your new crop fall delivery bids.
Old crop corn is 90 cents over September, or 646. New crop corn is 15 under December, or 538. So almost a dollar difference between old crop corn and new crop corn. On the soybean side, old crop beans are 50 over November at 1378, and new beans are 20 under November at 1308. So a 70-cent spread there.
And Tom?
Right now we're showing like a 5 over on the old crop corn and 25 under on the 5 over the D's on old crop and 25 under on the new crop. And we're not really corn country up here, so. The name of the game up here is wheat, and right now we're showing an 8 over the December for new crop wheat.
You're not corn country, but there is a big disparity. I expected that your corn bid might be at least in line with the rest of the country. Was surprised that it was only 5 over. Why is that the case?
We're a long ways from the demand sources that you guys are used to. We'd have to truck corn 5-6 hours to find anybody that's a corn processor. A lot of corn right now is going into Canada, and that has become, for the last year, more difficult to get in and out of Canada. So it's just a little more costly to go up there as well.
And soybeans are a crop that you handle fairly often?
When we have a crop, yes, and that's a concern this year. We're not going to have much of a crop, but there's a little more demand for soybeans, a little more ability to grow some soybeans in this country, and we do see a fair amount of soybean acres every year.
So Bill Biederman, Greg Johnson asked, how will farmers respond to the inverse? There's not one to speak of really very much, at least up where Tom is. But in much of the rest of the Corn Belt, certainly there is. How might they respond?
Well, if they have any corn left, I mean, this would be a gift to sell into, and then you might as well sell what's high and hold what's low. I mean, that's pretty obvious. So the question that I'd have for Greg is, in his buying circle, Is there a lot of old crop corn available?
There's more than what you would think. There's not going to be very much left. The market is basically telling farmers not to hold on to that old crop corn. Will we incent farmers to take new crop corn out of the field early in September and try to take advantage of that 90-cent to dollar premium, half price drying, free drying, push the bid, that type of thing? You know, will those premiums be available? And, you know, it'll be a week by week basis is my answer, because there may be corn farther south that's ready before our corn is, and so we have to kind of play that on a week by week basis. But farmers are definitely looking at that inverse and trying to figure out some way to take advantage of that with their new crop corn.
You do have an early ship bid for August, right?
We have a first half and a last half August bid, which is still higher than our all fall September, October, November bid. And that'll change as we get closer to the 1st of September. There's not going to be any corn ready around here in August, but in September, depending on how wet farmers want to take it off, we could see corn in that first 10 days of September, depending on the premiums and the drying incentives.
So that's one that farmers will try to take advantage of, certainly, I would think, if they can, to do a quick ship. However, they'll be faced with the bulk of their crop that they have to finish marketing sometime in the coming year, prior to the time we get to the September of 2022. And I'm wondering what each of you think at this point about how far along farmers should be. The $5.50 December cash price that continues to show up, and whether that is an option that they should be thinking about in some form at this point. And maybe, Garrett, I'll start with you and work my way through everybody.
Well, I mean, I think most people are sitting in here 30-40%, but I think once we get down to, kind of to that last question about the old crop in versus, it isn't as much about the old crop as it is new crop, and it's basically on early harvest. And when that's done, when the inverses go away, the farmer's going to quit selling. The farmer's going to most likely resort to selling beans off the scale, or selling beans out of the field if we're anywhere close to 1350 new crop values, and they're going to opt to store corn, and they're going to revert back to their old marketing habits and go that route. Now, that's the biggest concern I have, and it might lead into our next question. I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but are the Chinese going to be there to buy beans? They have beans coverage to make, but they've been pretty slow to do it. But I think that's my big concern in the bean market right now is that we're going to have an actual seller from the farmer in beans in the next 90 days. And, is the buying going to be there to absorb that? But I think the farmer, from a percent standpoint, I think most are still sitting here 40% or so. I think, the accelerated sales a little bit here in the last week to 10 days, once they got through the pollination period and saw things kind of went okay. But, they're waiting to get through the fill period and see what they've got before they get too aggressive on anything else.
Bill Biederman?
I believe that the farmers are going to try to maintain as much ownership as they can going into the new year, given the types of discrepancies we're seeing in the numbers between private industry and the USDA. And I think most farmers are going to believe private industry, because in the last 3 years we've proven USDA eventually gets there, and that'll probably be supportive. But we're 60% sold with our farmers on corn, and we're very comfortable holding on to 40% and taking the risk of ownership going into the spring when we believe these numbers will be revealed. As far as basis and things go, obviously if anybody who's buying corn has been around as long as they have to be to have survived this year, they're probably doing everything they can to cut their buying reasons and purposes over the next few weeks. So I mean, we're hearing some ethanol plants that are obviously going to get shut down. We're hearing some ethanol plants are going to swap some inventory. I don't know how much of that will really happen. But, you know, same with the river houses. People are going to do whatever they have to do because the market's telling them that. If they've got extra inventory around, they're going to dump it just like a farmer would and take advantage of the discount in the future. The market's going to do its job. It's going to solve the problem going into the next few weeks. But long term, I don't think the problems have been released on the headlines yet. So we don't know how these hedge funds will respond to it when we do see those numbers.
And Tom Guinan, maybe you can talk about this from two perspectives. One, from where you are today in Thief River Falls, Minnesota, 90 miles just south of the Canadian border. And then until recently, you have been working in one of the largest producing areas of Iowa, and maybe a bit more free to think about what that means for producers in that part of the world, too.
Sure, and I kind of agree with your other folks there. I think most farmers in Iowa were, you know, probably blown out of their old crop stocks, or maybe there's a few gambling stocks left over. But, you know, anything that's left in a bin should be sold now, you know, and take your chances on new crop as it comes. That inverse is going to crash at some point pretty quickly once we start seeing combines roll. I know we're a ways from that, but you just run a risk if you can hold on to that too long. Where we're at, it's really a wheat story. And, you know, I misspoke a little earlier. Maybe I should have said it differently. We've kind of moved to a new crop value for corn across this part of the industry. It's just there's just not a whole lot of corn left out here and not a lot of reason to be trying to get cute with trying to buy some high-priced corn and try to find a home for it. So that's the issue there. On the wheat, I think a lot of the guys up here are, you know, kind of looking at $9 wheat and saying with the reduced yields, I'm going to dollar out about where I would with a normal crop. So they're feeling pretty good about their wheat crop right now. It's a soybean crop and the corn crop that has yet to come to town that they're really, really concerned with because of this drought situation up here.
Can I ask you a little bit more about wheat and other crops in that area? Because the dry conditions cause some issues with protein. What does it mean for the millers and users of those small grains?
Well, and that's the interesting thing. This is a new world for me, you know, getting into wheat country. I've never worked in an area where we've had a lot of wheat, if any. And so as this new crop is starting to come in, we're seeing abnormally high proteins, you know, 15%, 16%, 17%, where normally you see 13 to 14%. And the initial reaction was, I hope the millers don't start discounting us for high protein. And I thought, my gosh, I've been in so many industries, I've never even thought about discounting somebody for high protein. It's always a premium for high protein. And basically what the millers are telling us, they're just not going to have a premium for any high protein, and they're not going to have a discount for high protein. So it really becomes kind of a moot point at this point. They like to get bread protein as, you know, 12.5% is really what they're gearing for. So when we flood them with 15% protein, they've got to have a source of lower protein to kind of bring that down. But it seems like we've got enough of the old crop around that we'll be okay is what they're telling us.
Greg Johnson, what are farmers in this part of the world doing with old crop and new crop?
Well, old crop is pretty well gone. New crop corn, I would say central Illinois farmers have sold ahead about 40% of their expected production. Some more, some less, but on average about 40%. And as Bill said, they seem pretty content to hold on to the rest and see how the numbers shake out. USDA was using a 1.4 billion carryout, but their yield seems a little high to most of the farmers that I talked to. So if you take, you know, a bushel or two off of that yield, that knocks your carryout down to 1.3. And then if the South American crop isn't as good and we pick up some exports, now all of a sudden you're looking at a 1.1, 1.2 out. And that's what we had this year, and we had $7 corn at times. So I think the farmers are saying, well, if we had $7 corn last year with a 1-1 carryout, maybe we can at least get $6 corn with a 1-2 carryout. So that, right or wrong, that seems to be the attitude right now. So they're 40% sold ahead and pretty content to wait it out and see if we get a rally based on a lower yield estimate or increased demand somewhere down the road.
Well, let's talk about those yield estimates. That was on your list, Bill Biederman. I know you and the rest of the folks at agmarket.net have done some of the math going into this crop production report, which is due out on the 12th of August next week. You wanted to talk about that, what the math looked like.
Well, we went through and we put in a near record or exceeded record in every single state except just a few. Mathematically, I'm telling you, it's impossible for USDA's number to be correct. Even with Illinois at 214, four bushels above the all-time record, Indiana at 192, which would be three bushels above the all-time record, you've got 16.6 million acres in those two states. You've got 12.1 million acres just in Minneapolis and North Dakota. So if we shave just, I'd say three, four bushels off of Minnesota and maybe 10 bushels off of North Dakota, which is really a mild adjustment, it's a net loss of 60 million bushel. If I put in a number for North Dakota of 134, which is only five bushels below last year, and I end up with a 175.9 yield with all other states at or above record. I take a 175.9 yield versus USDA's 179.5, which is obviously three bushels above the old record, I'm down to a 1-1 carryover. But that's not all the problem. Another big part of this picture is USDA, we have exports at 2.85. Of course, they started out at 2.15 a year ago, estimating that, even though they knew China was buying. It took them eight revisions to get to 2.85. That's 700 million bushel miss. And carryover went from 2.6 billion bushels down to 1.082 billion. That's a pretty big miss. So we know USDA is pretty good at missing. The logic is unbelievable. We've got 2.85 exports for this year, and they've got the exports for this coming year at 2.5. How are we going to lose 350 million bushels when we know China's going to have a 26 million ton deficit, and we just lost 10 million tons out of Brazil? Of course, they haven't reflected that in their numbers either. But, there's 360 million bushels there. You can't get it from Russia. You can't get it from Bulgaria, Ukraine, Argentina. There is a mathematical problem here, and it's going to be interesting to see how they resolve it.
Mr. Toy, how's your math work?
Well, I kind of agree with Bill, but there's some things you have to remember, too, is we've got 4 weeks left in the marketing year, and there's still 5 million metric ton of unshipped corn commitments for the old crop year. That's 200 million bushel. So however much of that is sitting here at the end of the year, or, in 4 weeks or the end of the month, really, half of that's going to China. So, if some of that gets rolled forward, then it's robbing Peter to pay Paul, obviously. I think there's some points there. I mean, obviously you've got about a 5 million metric ton gap, on corn, world corn export matrices. We were feeding wheat up until, 4 weeks ago. And now, we really have probably about a 20 million metric ton gap on wheat S&Ds between I think most people have the Russian wheat crop at 75 million metric ton, and you cut the Canadian, spring or the Canadian wheat crop another 5 to 7 million metric ton. So there's some gaps here that the USDA is going to have to count for. I do think that, Southeast wheat millers were using quite a bit more, the Southeast feeders, I should say, Southeast Asian feeders were using more wheat than corn as of late. But obviously now with this rally in wheat, absolutely nothing is being substituted with wheat at this point. So, there's going to be some issues here. I mean, the problem is, though, is with these eight revisions that the USDA had on these Chinese imports, the slow walk that they did, kind of tempered the story. The market always reacts better on the expectations rather than the realization, to see how this plays out. And we really don't know. I mean, the Chinese have these commitments on the books, but they've been canceling more than buying in corn here in the last 4 to 6 weeks. So,
Greg Johnson, can you look a little bit further down the line for me? Because I'm I'm wondering about the grain stocks report in September, the livestock numbers that we have had reported, especially for cattle, wheat feeding into that industry to begin with, and now, of course, because there was so little that was coming off in the way of hay and pasture to the west, that they're really concerned about having fewer numbers. Does that get reflected, and how big of a change might that be in the USDA figures on the last day of September?
Yeah, I think you could see there was some wheat feeding that probably wasn't reflected in the last government report. But as Garrett said, now with the wheat prices rallying, that gap between wheat and corn prices probably has discouraged feeding wheat at these price levels. So we probably will see a little bit of an adjustment. But since the last part of July, when this wheat market's taken off, I think it's priced itself out of the feed equation. So probably a little bit of a increase in corn stocks because of the wheat feeding, but that's certainly not going to, you know, extrapolate on forward into the future. So that's probably just a one-time thing, and then we go from there. And I think, again, the bigger issues are going to be the yield and the demand side of the equation as far as exports are concerned.
And what kind of working number does the Andersons have for the yield?
They're looking somewhere in that 175, 176 camp. You know, it's still a moving target because August will tell some of the story on corn and all of the story on beans, but right 5 to 176 camp.
Garrett, what number are you using?
We're all in the same boat. I mean, everyone's in this one. I mean, we had StoneX out this week. Hang on, I can't remember off the top of my head. We had Informa or IHS Market this morning at 176.5. We had FC Stone, StoneX at 176.9. I think everybody's in this 175 to 178, 79 type yield estimate. You know, and I think that's why you haven't really seen much of a market reaction to those private estimate numbers this week. You know, the corn market's like, meh, you know, and I think the reaction that we had today is more concerned about this hot, dry forecast for the Black Sea and what that could mean for Ukrainian corn as they finish that crop. Because obviously that's a bigger deal to China than what's happening in Brazil at this point because of Fido reasons. But yeah, I think 175 to 178 is a fair number on U.S. corn yield. Bean yield still to be determined, but, you know, anywhere from 49 to, you know, 50.5.
Did anybody see the one from Bar Chart? They were at 180.3. That's the CME group, right?
I think you had some people that moved towards the 180 numbers with that rains that we had last week in Western Iowa. I think there were some people that, you know, we were trading 175 and then some upper, you know, 180 type numbers came in with those rains that we're seeing in Western Iowa that came through and hit Missouri too.
The last 5 years, the national corn average has been 174.6, 176.6, 176.4, 167.5, and then last year's 172. So that average is 173.4. And back in 2017, one of those 5 years, we hit the record of 176.6. So if we really believe it's 179.5, like the government, we're saying that this is 3 bushels better than the all-time had. And if everybody's crop was as good as Illinois, I guess maybe I could believe that. But I'm pretty sure we all agree that it's not that good. So to use 179.5 just seems overly optimistic, in my opinion.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm so adamant about this math that I'd be willing to send a spreadsheet to anybody and challenge you to put your numbers in state by state. Put them in at record levels, put them in however you want, see what the number comes out. But it's just impossible. I don't think you can mathematically get there with the weighted number of acres that are in, you know, Missouri, South Dakota, North Dakota, and Minnesota. It just pulls it down too hard.
What are you using in Iowa, Bill?
In Iowa, I've got production at 198, which is tied with the record, and about half the state is struggling to be trend. The other half looks really good. So I think 198 or matching the old record is pretty close.
All right. So given everything that we've talked about, farmers will, of course, be faced with in charges for grain that they can't store. Let's just talk about that at this point. What might they consider? Should they put it in the grain elevator and at least wait till January? I'll start with you, Bill.
Well, I'm not a huge fan of storing grain unless you got your own tanks, but it depends on the charges. And I think that from a basis standpoint and from how these numbers could reveal over the next 5-6 months, I think storing will pay, both speculatively, but I don't think they'll pay carry on the board. I mean, like right now, we're looking at a small carry on the board, and we're already telling people you might want to roll out.
Greg Johnson?
Yeah, the one thing I would say is we have farmers that think they can get something for nothing, and they just sell the corn, and then they buy a July call. And I've gone back and done research, and basically that's a losing proposition if you just buy a July call and in the fall the same day you sell the corn, because the basis tends to improve enough to cover the storage charges. So that's kind of a wash. So then you're up to the futures price. If the futures go up, obviously you make money. If it doesn't, you lose money. But that seems to be a better strategy than just selling the corn and buying an out-of-the-money call, because especially in a year like this where the volatility is relatively high, I think you're just going to overspend for those options. Now, there's other strategies besides that, a covered call, maybe a vertical bull call spread. There's different ways to use options, but just buying a straight call, it seems to me like you're throwing good money after bad. So I would caution farmers from just doing that.
Garrett, I would love to follow up with you on this. How do you view it?
Yeah, I mean, if you're from a farmer that doesn't have storage, their best bet, you're not going to have much. if this is as tight, if this year's going to be as tight as what we all expect it to be, there's going to be very little, if any, carry in the market. We're going to be dealing with inverses. In fact, we talked about the stocks report, here at the end of the month or at the end of September. The weakest cash that you have out here on delivery break even is the September. You've got December that's basically at delivery break even. You've got March at above delivery break even. So as far as corn carries are concerned, I kind of agree with Bill that, if you see one, take it, because they're probably not going to be dealing with a whole heck of a lot for the rest of the year. The interesting thing, though, is again, back to this demand thing, there's been a massive collapse in the Jan-March bean spread this past week. And typically, the Nov Jan has started to widen, get into 5-6 cents. And this collapse in the Jan-March, that's not necessarily implying that we're going to see a massive Chinese export book here through the fall, and that the market is concerned about being able to source beans for a Chinese export program. So that's something to keep an eye on, especially if you're, if we go back to the old mantra of selling beans and storing corn, because, there's some people out there that can't store everything. If that's something that the bean carries do develop, then again, lock them in here, because things could be tighter on the back end of the curve.
Anybody else want to jump in on soybean sales?
We've been talking a lot about the supply side of this thing. I would just caution everybody that, if this COVID ramps up again, and just be careful of the demand side too.
South America, Brazil is talking about planting about 1.2 million more acres of beans too in response to these higher prices. So, these high prices do have consequences, and, not only will we see less demand, the other thing is we will see an increased supply in bean acres. And then we haven't even talked about political ramifications. I know there's pressure on the administration to lighten up the mandates on biodiesel, especially some of the food manufacturers are saying that the vegetable oils are, going through the roof, and they're having to pass those costs along, and they really don't want to do that. So there's political pressure as well. So we just, not that that's necessarily going to happen. I don't know what the odds of that happening are, but that's just another unknown that we probably have to keep in the back of our minds.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because the oil industry would not like the RFS on the ethanol side or corn as a 10% additive, but they do like the RFS as an advanced fuel on the biodiesel, because they can use soybean oil and other types of oil as well as an advanced fuel and generate a profit out of that. So interesting policy issues. Bill, one last question for you, and then we'll get a final word from everybody. So the USDA number, that always flummoxed me, or has since May, is now the $5.60 cash price. Is that one closer to right?
Well, at 179.5, okay, so like if we, you know, just take basic economics and we lower our supply curve and we raise our demand curve a little bit, obviously that average price should be a little bit higher. How much higher? I don't know, because I'm not sure how they, what their elasticities are set at. But I will tell you this, history tells us that the tighter a needed commodity inventory gets, the more inelastic that market becomes. Perfect example, we had a fuel shortage in Atlanta not too long ago, and prices were at $4. Whereas in Tennessee, and I drive back and forth a lot, it was about $1.20 cheaper. So, you know, when you have a regional shortage, it becomes inelastic. Well, here we have, I would call a microeconomic problem, because it's just basically U.S. numbers that we're talking about here, a little bit on the world. But bottom line is, we're going to have an economic response if these numbers ever are unfolded.
Okay, a final word from each of you now. I think Tom Guinan from Thief River Falls and Farmers Grain will get your final word to begin with today.
Yeah, I would just say just be prepared for higher bread prices and pasta prices at the store. This wheat situation is pretty real from here west and north.
Greg Johnson of the Andersons?
I'm going to take the coward's way out and say, since I'm from Illinois, we know we're going to have an abundant corn crop for sure. And so I think farmers can move away from price prediction a little bit and just lock in profit. I mean, if we're going to have 230, 240 bushel corn and you can sell it for 550, we probably should. So I am encouraging people to get 50% sold. And then, you know, based on everything we talked about today with the carryouts probably going to come down, I think you can afford to wait for higher prices for the rest of it. But there's no sense in having all your eggs in one basket, especially when you know that you're going to have eggs to sell. So let's get some corn sold at these good prices.
Garrett Toy from AgTraderTalk.com.
Unfortunately, this year is probably going to be the easier marketing year. Next year is going to be a little bit more difficult. Trying to get input prices for next year are almost impossible to get. And then once you get one, the corn will rally a dime, and the quote that you got yesterday is no longer good today. So this year we're into the 40-50% mark of as far as marketing. Start doing your homework as far as 2022 is concerned, because you know, next year the bar will be raised. You know, we're going to have to deal with higher supplies. The board's already rallied. You know, and it's time to sit down and run your numbers, make sure you've got an educated profit plan in front of you before pulling the trigger on some things.
Bill Biederman from AgMarket.net, your final word.
Well, I don't disagree with anything anybody said. I mean, we're 60% on corn, and we've got some options bought against it also, and then we're 50% on beans. I mean, like Greg said, you've got huge profitability on most farms right now. You might as well take that, secure it, you know, book the vacation and hold the rest going into next year when these numbers will pan out. Here's two black swans, two potential black swans. One would be ASF hits the United States shoreline. You'd be looking at limit down on corn, beans, and meal, and you'd be looking at limit down on hogs, obviously. And then obviously that is followed by a rebuild situation. So it's bearish for the first week and bullish hogs after that. And I don't know what will be on grains. The U.S. Chinese political issues are extremely, I mean, it's as thick as can be. And those things need to be watched, because you could wake up some morning and we could be back in a trade war or something like that. So those are the two black swans I'd keep my eyes open on.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like. You can do that from our website at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go this week to our panelists, including Bill Biederman from AgMarket.net, Tom Guinan from Farmers Grain, Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and Garrett Toy from AgTraderTalk.com. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.